After his experience under Diller at Paramount, Eisner didn't want another number two job. But Welles indicated he wouldn't mind reporting to Eisner. While Eisner said he'd be enthusiastic about coming to Disney as chief executive, he alluded to recent articles in the Los Angeles Times that suggested that the reporter, Catherine Harris, had a source in the boardroom. Eisner strongly suspected that gold had been leaking to the press. He warned them that he would not tolerate boardroom leaks in any company where he was in charge. "I want you to give me your word, Stanley, that you will never breach the secrecy of board deliberations." Gold said that was fine with him, and in any event, he denied being Harris's source. Ray Watson had initially been cool to the idea of Eisner, but Gold worked hard to sell him on the combination of Eisner and Welles. Still, there was resistance from some board members who wanted a more seasoned industry veteran like Dennis Stanfill, former head of 20th Century Fox. Eisner met with Watson 2 weeks later to seek his support. He felt comfortable with the unassuming, even-tempered Watson, who managed by consensus. The two discussed their mutual interest in architecture, and Eisner stressed what an impression Pinocchio had made on him when he took Jane and his son Breck to see it at a Bronx, New York drive-in. "You guys are ripe to be turned around in movies and television," Eisner told Watson. "You're in the same position that Paramount was when I started there, and ABC before that. There are enormous opportunities to ramp up production. The Disney brand name is still a unique, largely untapped asset." The next day, Welles called Eisner to report on his own meeting with Watson. Watson had been cool to the idea of co-chief executives, so Welles had stepped aside in Eisner's favor. "You need creativity more than anything else," Welles had told Watson. To Eisner, he said, "I think you've got the job." In the cutthroat world of Hollywood, it made a deep impression on Eisner that Welles would sacrifice the top job on his behalf. Watson wrote his fellow board members that hiring someone with Eisner's reputation and track record would instantly provide us with the substance and image to show the world we mean business when we say we are going to turn this company around, and by doing so, ward off any more hostile takeovers. A few days later, Watson called Eisner to tell him the board was meeting the next day to remove Miller and that he would recommend that Eisner replace him. Watson would stay on for the time being as chairman, which was fine with Eisner as long as he was named sole chief executive. Marty Davis, Eisner's boss at Gulf and Western, was visiting Los Angeles that same week, and the next day he summoned Eisner to discuss his Paramount contract. Before Davis could begin, Eisner said, "I think I'm about to be offered the job as president and CEO of Disney." It was satisfying to be able to turn the tables on Davis like that, after all the bad things he'd heard from Diller. Davis was obviously surprised. "I won't stand in your way," was all he said. As Eisner was meeting with Davis, Miller appeared before Roy, Gold, and other members of the Disney board at the studio, knowing that he was about to be formally relieved of his position. "Don't you have something to say to me?" he said. "Aren't you men?" Silence was the only reaction. "I'm very disappointed in this," Miller continued. "I've given my life to this company. I've never worked anywhere else. I've made progress with this company. I think I've taken great strides in leading it as far as it has come. I feel like this is a betrayal." Miller glared at Roy in particular, who, as usual, said nothing. Then he turned to Gold.